Morning. Today's Daf Nirchin is Daf Gimel. Pick it up right where we left off yesterday in the very bottom of Beis Amud Beis. And as we start the new Masechta, so it became abundantly clear that the discussion in the beginning of the Masechta is not about Erchin. But it comes up in the beginning of the Masechta as part of a general discussion with the opening words of the Mishnah. The Mishnah opened up with the words, HaKol Ma'arichim and Arachim Nodrim V'Nidarim. So the Mishnah says that everybody is subject to both being ma'arich, that means they are the ones donating, ne'arach being the object of a donation, nojim v'nidarim, and they can be noder, which is also another type of neder, and nidarim, they could be the object of a neder as well. And so with that introduction of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah uses the words hakol, so hakol means everybody. So everybody, of course, does not mean everybody, right? If you've been around long enough, you know that that's in fact the case. But when the Mishnah says the word hakol, it means more people than you thought. The Mishnah is teaching us that the halachas of who's included in Erchin extends a little bit beyond what you would have perceived, as is the case with Neder and Nidarim as well. And the Gemara yesterday used this as a springboard, and it launched into a lengthy discussion. Where else in Shas do we find the word Hakol? And when we see it anywhere else in Shas, what is it coming to include? So when it comes to Ma'arich and Anarachim, so if you remember yesterday, when we talk about Ma'arich, and again, just to quickly recap, the Parsha of Erchim, we're going to be spending a lot of time later in the Masechta talking about it in much greater detail. I'm just going to sketch right now. But when we talk about Erchim, we mean that a person wants to donate to the Beis HaMikdash. One of the vehicles in which he can donate, an instrument he could use, is what's called Erchim. And that means that you look in the Torah, in the 27th parak of Vayikra, and you will find that the Torah gives a schedule of exactly how much a person is assessed based on his gender and on his age. And if I say I'm going to give an Erech, so I'm going to be paying based on that assessment. When the Mishnah says the words Ma'arich, and specifically Hakol, so the Mishnah means to say that we're including more people than what we thought. Who can also be Ma'arich? Other than what you thought, meaning obviously adults, who else? So the Gemara said yesterday said children as well. Now we don't really mean children; we mean mufla samachlish, meaning if the boy is 12 years of age and he shows that he has the basic understanding of what's going on in terms of what I'm donating, who I'm donating to, et cetera, so then that would work. In terms of ne'erach, so who is going to be the object? So again, ne'erach means that you either give your own assessment, your own value, or I give somebody else's value. Who could be the object of an erchin? So the Mishnah says, Hakol, everybody. And again, who's included now that I didn't necessarily think would be included? So the Gemara yesterday said, Menuvam Bukashchin, somebody who does not have a market value. He's so disgusting, he's so physically abhorrent that he wouldn't fetch anything on the market, but he has an erich, because erich is only based on two factors, only on gender and age. And so therefore that is going to be included. And then what we did yesterday in the Gemara is we went through the rest of the Mishnah. What about Noder? What about Nidar? Who is what's the Hakol doing over there? So go back to yesterday's Gemara to review that. As long as we started the Hakol discussion, so in yesterday's Daf, we covered topics of Smicha. The Mishnah says Hakol, everyone's going to be doing Smicha. Who is that coming to include? So you remember yesterday we had opinions on that matter. We also discussed yesterday Sukkah Lulav, Tzitzis Tfilin, the mitzvah of Alila Rego, and the Olas Re'iyah, and Shofar, and that's what we covered yesterday. So those are the topics that we covered yesterday in terms of Hakol and who the Hakol is coming to include. Picking it up right where we left off yesterday, we are now on the last line of Beis Amud Beis, Hakol Chayav Mimikra Megillah. Everybody's obligated in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah, Hakol Ksheren Likros Es HaMegillah. Everybody is acceptable, is kasher, yeah, best way to say it. Everyone is kasher to read the Megillah L'Asuyim. So who's that coming to include? L'Asuyim Nashim. So it's coming to include women. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. Now, I said it, that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. What do I mean by that? Take a look at Rashi in the top of the Amud. Rashi is very clear. Rashi says, L'Asuyim Nashim, Shechayav is b'mikra Megillah. So they're obligated in Mikra Megillah. Uksheros l'krosa. And Rashi says, and not only that, but they can even read the Megillah as well. U'lahotzi zechar midei chavasim, and they can be fulfilling the obligation of men. Meaning, the way Rashi understands it, it goes like this. The mitzvah of Megillah is a mitzvah midrabanan. That we all understand. We all know that. The Megillah, the Mikra Megillah, the Yontif of Purim, etc., etc. So it's all based on an ace that occurs hundreds of years after Matan Torah. So obviously it's a din derabanan. But at the same time, however, generally you would assume that it would follow the general rules of Dine Doraisa. So we know that, of course, Mikra Megillah is a mitzvah sesei shasman gram. It's a time-bound mitzvah. And so one would entertain the idea that women would be exempt because it's a time-bound mitzvah. And what the Gemara is teaching us now is that that's not so. The mitzvah Megillah was instituted for both men and women. Rashi's understanding of the Gemara over here is that when the mitzvah Megillah was instituted for both men and women, so on even par, on even footing. So as much as a man is obligated in the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah, so to women as well. So once they're on even footing with one another, so it means now that you can have one be motzi another. Remember the Gemara in Brachos and Daf Chaf, the rules are very simple. When people are on par with one another, one could be motzi the other. If one is not on par with one another, if one's obligation is daraisa and the other obligation is a darabanan, so then one cannot be, the daraisa cannot be motzi, sorry, other way around. The darabanan cannot be motzi the daraisa because they're not on even footing with one another. So Rashi clearly over here is understanding that they're on even footing with one another and therefore a woman could be motzi a man. Is that by consensus? And the answer clearly is no. It's not by consensus. Give me a moment. It's not by consensus. Tosus over here writes, and this is a Tosus a number of places throughout Shas, over here in Gemara Megillah, as you can guess, that women are obligated in Kriyas Megillah, meaning that's clearly what is being taught to us over here, but not on even footing with men. A woman can read the Megillah, can be Yotzei with her Kriyas Megillah, but a woman cannot be Motzei a man with her Kriya. Okay, that is the opinion of Tosus. Tosus quoting the Bahag. Bahag, one of the early Rishonim. The Bahag states this very clearly. Tosus seems to adopt this position that a woman cannot read the Megillah on behalf of a man. So again, just to be clear, according to the Bahag, women are obligated in Kriyas Megillah, and women can read for themselves, and according to the Bahag, women can read for other women, but women cannot read for men. And so what needs explanation, I'm not going to give it now, but just to understand, though, that many a shir revolves around the idea of what's the svar behind the Bahag, what is the nature of the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah. For women, according to the Bahag, that the Bahag feels that women's obligation is not on the same footing of that of a man. Why should that be? What's behind the position of the Bahag? So many shiurim are given around that topic. This is not a time for shiur. This is a time to get to the daf. But just know that you're gonna hear if you enjoy shiurim, you're gonna hear one or two shiurim about this topic. Yeah.
Yesterday, all the calls they were to extend for the kids. Boy, he's 12, he could go 13.
Not all. Okay, well, anyway. No, but, just one, but okay.
But why not be this acolytes for women? Is not for prior acolytes, we don't extend to women also, like the tefillin or lulav.
Because we know.
You're extending to women.
Yeah, correct.
Others, we're not.
There's a certain, again, when you start off with the word hakol does not mean everybody. That's rule number one. Hakol does not mean everybody.
Right.
Hakol means is that we understand that it speaks to a specific population. Even within that population, there's just a little more expansion.
So why the expansion that doesn't include women for, say, lulav and sukkah?
But those are very easy, though, because those are mitzvahs that say shazman grammar. They're time-bound mitzvahs. Women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs.
But this one is also...
Good, but it's also mitzvah derabanan. And there are other factors involved, meaning over here there's pirsum hanes. And there are other factors involved. You're right. But in other words, but they don't operate all the same way. And, okay, that part's pretty clear. Continuing in the Gemara. The very top of Gimel Amud Aleph. The Amr of Yeshua Ben Levi Nashim Chayavas Mimikra Megillah. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah Shav Hena Yaboso. And it's because they were also part of the miracle. And again, here too, by the way, there's a debate in terms of what exactly does that mean they're also part of the miracle. So Rashi is quiet over here on this topic, but if you take a look at Rashi in Megillah and you look at Tosfos in the Megillah, you'll see a couple of opinions in terms of what exactly means that they were af hein hayaboso nes, they were part of the miracle. Basically, two ways to say it. Either you could say that they were instrumental in the miracle, meaning the miracle comes about through women, Esther. That's one possibility. The other possibility is af hein hayaboso nes is that they were also going to be destroyed, meaning they were also part of the Gzera of Haman, and they were also going to be destroyed, and so that's what the Gemara means. If you take a look at Tosfos over here, Tosfos seems to adopt the second view. The end of the Tosfos, Divrei Maskil, Lasui Nashim. If you look at the last two lines of Tosfos, he writes, Elish Shechayavim B'Shmiya, they're obligated to hear the Megillah, L'fisha Kol Ayub B'Suffik, Lahashmid Lahiru Galabed, because they were also subject to the annihilation and the edict of Haman. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. Hako chayav v'ziman. Everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of ziman. When three people eat together, so there's a mitzvah of ziman. There's always a mitzvah to bench when you eat and you have enough to satisfy, or midrabanan, if you have a kezias, so there's a mitzvah to bench. When you are satisfied, there's a mitzvah to bench minatara. When eating with two other people, when three men eat together, so now there's a ziman. The ziman is, the Gemara in Brachas describes as an additional bracha. Right? In other words, benching itself is three brachas. Now, I know it's a little bit confusing because if you count it out, four brachas. Okay, so see the seventh parak of brachas for more discussion on that, whether it's three or four brachas. It's really both. The fourth bracha is midrabanan. But anyway, but on top of that, when three men are eating together, so there is also an additional bracha put on the front end of benching. That's called ziman. Okay, I know it's not in the normal nusach ha-bracha. It's not Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. But still, it's the Gemara over there views it as an additional bracha. We call the ziman. Good. So we all understand that when three men eat together, there's a ziman. The Gemara says, ha-kol chayav m'ziman. Everyone's obligated in ziman. So the ha-kol obviously is coming to include. So who's included? La-su-yama, 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 la-su-yama la'atzman, va'avadim mezam la'atzman. So women make a zimun on their own, slaves make a zimun on their own. Now, why do they make a zimun on their own? Why do slaves make a zimun on their own? So Rashi over here, or is it the Gemara in Brachos? So either way, one of the Rashis. Okay, fine. Rashi over there in Brachos, seventh parak, says that the women, the reason why we have women and avadim benching separately, making zimun separately, is because it's nias, meaning it's the matzis for women and avadim to be together, to be eating together, and to be making a zimun together. So because of nias, so therefore they're to be kept separate. How about women making a zimun with men? So Rashi over here writes, so that can't be, because even though women are obligated in zimun, I'll get to that word that I said obligated, I'll get to that in just back to that in just a moment. But women are obligated in zimun, but still, again, we'll go make a point that we made earlier, so their obligation may not be on the same footing with that of men. And that's Rashi's point over here. Rashi's point is that even though men bench and women bench, but it's not the same benching. There are aspects of benching that are that include men that don't include women, right? The two notable points is that in benching you have the idea of bris, you have the idea of Torah, they have the idea of bris, you have the idea of Yerusha. So this obviously is specific to men and not to women. Therefore the benching is not the same. So therefore women and men cannot make a zimun together. Okay, fine. Again, another major discussion, a major debate, and Tosfos over here touches on this as well, is that fine. So we just learned together now that women make a zimun, as do men make a zimun, to be done separately. Women, when they eat together, three women eating together, so does that mean they can make a zimun, or the other option is they're obligated to make a zimun? So this is a major discussion, this is a major debate, and again, I'm not here to go through every detail in the debate, just highlighting the basics. Tosfos over here writes, Tosfos Divrei HaMashal Mezam La'atzman. So he says that women are not obligated to make a zimun, but optionally may make a zimun. Tosfos over here in the middle of the Tosfos Mezam La'atzman, he writes, V'tzarchlam ha'derishus hu le'nashim le'zamin avachiyuv aleka. There's no obligation for women to make a zimun, but if three women eat together, so they simply have an option of making a zimun. A lot of Rishonim don't agree with Tosfos, notably the Rush does not agree with Tosfos. He says that women are obligated to make a zimun if in fact they eat amongst themselves. Okay, so Nashim mezam la'atzman, v'adam mezam la'atzman. Hakol mitzdarfin lezimun. In terms of who can be included in the zimun, we're back in the Gemara. So that includes a minor. A minor can be included in the zimun. So presumably the simple pshat over here of our Gemara is that if I have two adults eating together with a minor, but the minor has cognitive understanding, lemi mevarchin, who are we benching towards? So then he could be included in the zimun, and you now have a zimun with the two adults and a minor. The Amar of Nachman, Yodela mi mevarchim mizamnen alav. As long as the minor understands what exactly who's benching to, so then he can be included in the zimun. There is a lengthier discussion of this in the Gemara in Brachos, again back in the seventh parak, where all the halachas of zimun are located. and over there a major discussion to what extent a minor can be included in a Zimun, and for that matter in a Minyan, and for that matter there is a really long Tosfos over there that discusses that topic. Hakom etam and beziva, and we now shift gears. We are now transitioning into other areas in Halacha, and again, because the whole thread of all of our Gemaras is the word hakol. Every time I see the word hakol, it's coming to include, and hakom etam and beziva, everyone's subject to tumaziva. What is tumaziva? So, if a man or a woman has a discharge, it's not a, for a man, we're not talking about a seminal discharge, it's another type of discharge, it's a zav discharge. I can't give you a modern definition of what it is. We don't have it. It's basically, if just to give you an idea of what it would be like, it'd be something like a gonorrheal discharge, but that's not what it is. It's a zav discharge. For a woman, also a woman having a zav discharge, for her, it comes out like blood, but it's not a menstrual discharge. It's, again, a zava discharge. So men and women are subject to the ziva tuma, if in fact they have the discharge. Now, hakol means everybody. So who's being included over here? Lasui mai lasui tinuk ben yomo. So it's coming to include tinuk ben yomo. Tinuk ben yomo meaning that if a child, and for that matter a minor, and for that matter even an infant. Now, the chances of an infant having this kind of discharge, I have no idea. Let's even say it's really rare. Doesn't matter. The point is that if in fact they have such a discharge, they're going to be tamei. Detanya, the Gemara quotes a brisa that gets us to this conclusion. Ish matamalamri ish. The rabbis tinek ben yom echad shematame beziva divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah gives us the double lashon of ish, it means that not only if a man has a zav discharge, but even if an infant male has a discharge, he's going to be matame with tumazav. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer Eino Tzarech. Now, Rabbi Shmuel, correct conclusion, I don't need your drasha. Harei Omer v'hazav et zavo, l'zachal nekeva. The Torah in giving us the halachas of zav and tumazav. So the Torah says, hazav et zavo, l'zachal nekeva. The Torah doesn't make it contingent on being an adult and being physically mature. The Torah just simply says, either you're a male or you're female. L'zachar koshuhu. Zachar ben katan ben gadol. L'nekeva koshuhu. Nekeva ben katana ben gadola. So when it comes to a male, doesn't matter if it's an adult or a minor. When it comes to a female, doesn't matter if it's an adult or a minor. Im ke matam olam re'ishishti b'tor koloshim b'nei adam. I, the Torah's double language of the term ish, because the Torah writes in a manner in which people speak. People speak that way. The Torah writes that way. So, but he does not feel that the conclusion correct, but the drasha of ish is, according to Rabbi Shmuel, simply not necessary. Okay. Hakom etamen v'tumas meis. Everyone is subject to tumas meis. So, meaning everyone is going to be the recipient of tumas meis. Now, who is that hakol coming to include? Lasui emai. Lasui katan. So it's coming to include a minor. Sakadat chamina. Now, why would I have thought that if a minor comes into contact with Tumas Meis, he's not going to become tummy? What's the havamina? So the Gemara explains. Ish asher yitma v'lo yischata. So if a ish is usually a reference to an adult. If a man becomes tummy and he does not purify himself, ish in katan lo. So I might have thought that it applies only to men and not to minors. Kamash malam v'al nefashos asher hayusham. So, but by virtue of the fact that the Torah says the word nefashos means anyone who has a nefesh, obviously a minor is included in that. So, therefore, subject to tumas meis. Ela ish lamut emai. So, good. So, now that we know that minors are included in becoming tamei meis, so now how do I know? I'm sorry. Why would the Torah use the word ish? So, my lamute kata mikari. So, the Gemara has a fascinating comment. The Gemara says that the reason why the Torah says the word ish is to tell me that a katan is not subject to the kares penalty. Okay, that's difficult to understand. Meaning the katan is not subject to the kares penalty is based on a drasha. Why not based on the fact that he's a katan? Meaning every katan, every minor is simply not subject to any kind of penalties, any kind of liabilities. And over here it sounds like we have a special drasha that if a katan becomes tamei meis and he goes into the base of mikdash, he's not going to be subject to kares because of this drasha. What do you mean because of the drasha? He's a minor. Minors are simply not at the age of onshin. They're not bar onshin. Tosfos already is bothered by this question. Tosfos writes, "Lamute kat mikares." Last two lines of the Tosfos, "V'yesh lidmo lama likra lepotro kevan delo matzinu kata nenash." We never find a child being punished. He's not subject to punishments. "V'chein kash berg dal mitzvos ish ki inaf prat lekatan." So, and on top of that, Tosha says, as long as we're on the subject of a child not being punished and I need a special drasha, so by adultery, there's also a special drasha. That if a minor is involved in an act of adultery, so the minor is above 9 years of age, so that means that his bia is a bia, but he is obviously not 13 yet, so that means to say he's not going to be subject to the death penalty. Now, how do I know that? What do you mean, how do I know that? I know it because he's a minor. And meanwhile, the Gemara over there in Sanhedrin says we have a drasha. Why do we need a drasha? So Tosas over there has a really interesting suggestion. You know, we would have thought that the minor would have been put to death be no different than an animal. Meaning an animal that has relations with a, that's involved in a rios and has a bestiality relationship with a man or a woman. So the animal's put to death. What, because the animal sinned? No, because the Gemara description is kalon. It's embarrassing. Embarrassing for the animal to go around, and people will speak about what that animal did with that person, and it will be embarrassing. Not to the animal, by the way, it will be embarrassing to the person. So therefore, the animal is put to death. So one might have considered, again, it's a havamina. One might have considered, we'll do the same thing with a minor as well. So the chiddush is that that's why I need special drasha, that the minor is not being put to death. Okay, fine. So that's by noef, the noefes. But over here, what would be the havamina to say that a minor who was subject to Tumas Mason walks into the base of Mikdash, we would have thought he would have gotten kares, but we have the drasha telling us otherwise. How could that be? So v'shema itzrich the sakadah chamina hov v'nisrab l'tuma yischayev kares kamash malan delom. So Tosos makes the following suggestion. He says, look, the fact that they are tummy to begin with in of itself is a chiddush. Meaning you could have made the argument that Tumah is only for somebody who's a ben das and understands that he's not allowed to come into contact with the Tumah, and he comes into contact with Tumah. But a minor becoming Tumah to begin with already is a Chiddush. And so therefore one would have thought, it would be extend the Chiddush. Meaning now that the Torah has made him subject to becoming Tumah, so then the Torah also will make him subject to the onshim, to the punishments of being Tumah, notably Karis if he walks into the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Everyone is subject to tzaras. And who is the everybody? So lasui katan, I might have thought that it is a minor. Ish tzaruaksiv, ish in katan lo. So I might have thought that tzaras only applies to an adult, but not to a minor. Kamash malan. So the Gemara says, so the chiddush is no. That if a minor has the tzaras spot, he in fact will be subject to Tumas Saras. Now, over here, by the way, you can easily understand the Havamina. Meaning, we know, the Gemara in Erchin tells us, that's funny, we're in Erchin. So the, but later in the Perek. I don't think this Perek, I think the next one. But anyway, yeah, next one. Next two. We're going to learn together in Erchin that Saras comes about because of a person's Averas, notably Lashon Hara. There are going to be other Averas as well. It's not just Lashon Hara. So one could make the argument, it's a really strong argument, that a minor who is not subject to punishments, we already discussed that, so therefore if he has tzaras, it's not really tzaras, meaning physically it may look like tzaras, but halachically it's not tzaras because, in other words, he can't be held accountable for his actions, and so now the chiddush is, it's a big chiddush, is that a minor is in fact going to be subject to tzaras. In fact, it's such a big chiddush, the Gemara in fact even pushes back a little bit, ve'em achinami, I don't understand. Maybe that should be the correct conclusion. Maybe a minor is not subject to tzaras. Adam kiyeh be'or b'saro mikom makom. Now, because when the Torah describes it, the Torah uses the words Adam. Adam means any, not man, but mankind. Meaning any person. Any person who gets a tzaras, spot, he's going to be subject to tumas tzaras. Ve'ele ish lamali. So then why would the Torah use the word ish lecha detanya for the following brisa? Ish ein le'ele ish isha minayin. When the Torah says the word ish, I might have thought that tzaras is only specific to men, not to women. So when the Torah says the word sarua, the one with tzaras, so that comes to include somebody else meaning women. So as far as the Torah specifying men, why would the Torah specify men if tzaras in fact applies to both men and women? So the Gemara says to teach us a different halacha, in that tzaras has a facet of it that only applies to men, not to women. Notably, ish porea uforeim, veina isha poras uforamas. So the Gemara says the difference between men and women in terms of tzaras is as follows. That if a man, in fact, has tzaras, so he goes through as part of the Tahara process. He goes through Poreya. He lets his hair grow long. Ufareim, and he tears his clothing. A woman does not do that. A woman does not have to become disheveled, even though she is, in fact, a mitzora. That's the difference between men and women, and that's why the Torah uses the word ish. Hakoronis the Nagayim. Okay, who's qualified to look at Saras? So we already know that in terms of the population who looks at Saras and rules on Saras, that's, of course, Kohanim. Kohanim are the ones who look at Saras. When we say Hakoronis the Nagayim, so who are we looking to include over here? Meaning, again, we know our population is Kohanim. Even within Kohanim, who are we including? Hakol Kshirim LaRos as a Nagayim, LaSuyeh, Mai LaSuyeh, Sheino Baki Behem, Nu Vishmo Sehem. So, you know who can look at it, Saras? Somebody who does not know what he's looking at. Meaning, so I have a Kohen, and he's not learned, and so he can look at Saras. Now, everyone ready for the obvious question? If he doesn't know what he's looking at, and he doesn't know the halachas of Saras, so it's really nice that he could look at the Saras, right? It'd be me trying to diagnose any kind of medical condition. Sure, I'd love to come over and take a look. Okay, and what do I have to say on it? I'm totally uneducated. I wouldn't have the first thing to know. I wouldn't know what to say about it. But okay, good. I can look. So it's the obvious question. If our Kohen does not know the halachas and does not know how to identify which saras is what, so what point would there be to say, oh, he can look at it? Okay, and render what? An opinion? It's not an opinion, it's a guess. So v'hamar mar, you know, baki behenav shemaseim in a rose and a gaim. In fact, it almost seems to be too obvious a statement. If a Kohen does not know the identity of the various different types of saras, and he cannot identify, and he doesn't know the halacha, so he cannot look at saras. In other words, he's not entitled to an opinion. He just simply doesn't know. So how can we say that our hakol regarding who can look at saras is going to be our unlearned Kohen? Unlearned Kohen can't look at Saras. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So I'm Ravina Lokasha, Hadam Savar Leva Savar, Hadam Savar Leva Lo Savar. So the Gemara says like this. Okay. So we have a Kohen who does not know the halachas of Saras. Fine. So, but at the same time, however, the Torah demands that who is the only one who has the ability to look at Saras and render a decision? A Kohen. Okay. So here's what he could do. Our Kohen, assuming that, and this is what the Gemara just made the distinction, assuming that if you told him the halacha and explained to him the rationale behind the halacha and he understands it, so basically what you can do is you can have a Kohen looking at Saras with somebody knowledgeable behind him, and that person knowledgeable behind him doesn't have to be a Kohen. Meaning his knowledge base can be a Yisrael standing right there who happens to know, who happens to know everything about Saras. And so now he'll look at the Kohen will look at the Nega. The Yisrael behind him will say, okay, now that is, right? No. And he'll identify which Saras, he'll give him the proper diagnosis, and he'll say to the Kohen exactly what he needs to say. Only if, and this is what the Gemara just said, only if the Kohen has enough understanding where, once explained to him, so he could say it over. If, however, our Kohen is so unlearned that even after you explain to him, he just simply can't say it over, so even this context won't work. Even our Kohen, fortified with a knowledgeable Yisrael behind him, but if he cannot articulate, if he can't simply repeat the svara, so then he can't look at it. Look at Tosfos over here. I'm not going to go through it right now. The Mesaver Levesaver. Tosfos notes that there is a brace out there that says that you can have the biggest Amaritz Kohen in the world, but as long as someone behind him knows what he's talking about, so that would work as well. That seems to go against our Gemara. Okay, see Tosfos for that discussion. Hakol Ksherim LeKadesh. Okay, moving topics, we're now talking about Paraduma. So by Paraduma, so there's a couple stages, more than a couple. There are several stages of Paraduma. We're going to be focusing on two stages. We're going to be talking about Kiddush, and we're going to be talking about Hazah. What's Kiddush? Preparing the solution. So the Paraduma solution is Mayim Chayim, it's spring water, and the ashes of the Paraduma. And they're mixed together as a solution. That putting together the Mayim Chayim and the ashes, that's Kiddush. So who is able to do Kiddush? HaKol Kshirim LeKadesh. So the Mishnah tells us that everybody. Now, again, who's our everybody? Lasui Amai L'Rabbi Yehuda Lasui Katan. U'L'Rabban Lasui Isha. So various opinions in terms of who's being included. Either it's going to be a minor or it's going to be women. Now the Gemara quotes the Mishnah. HaKol Kshirim LeKadesh Chutz Mecher Shot V'Katan. According to the Tanakhama, everyone can do Kiddush except for those who do not have mental competency, including children. And Rabbi Yehuda machshir b'katan uposel b'isha v'androgynous. And Rabbi Yehuda says that a minor is acceptable, but a woman and androgynous are not acceptable. The Gemara does not go through the svaras over here. The Gemara does not go through the drushas over here. Rashi says all this is discussed in more detail in Yuma. So see Yuma for more discussion on this matter. Another step of the Parah Aduma is the actual sprinkling, meaning after the solution's been prepared, so a kohen is going to take azov, dip it. Azov is, you know, in English translated as hyssop, if that helps anybody. So he takes the azov, he dips it into the solution, and he sprinkles it on the person who's tamei meis. Day 3, day 7, after that he's tovels in the mikvah on day 7, experiences hair of shemesh, and the tumas meis is gone. Who's doing the hazah? Hakok sherim lahazah, so everybody could do the hazah. So who's the hakol? Who's everybody? So lasuya mai, lasuya arel kud rabbi lazar dama rabbi lazar arel shizah hazah sok shera. So we were talking about somebody who is not circumcised. Somebody who's not circumcised can still do the hazah. Rashi over here writes, I'm telling you, count on Rashi every single time. Rashi writes that we're talking about someone who's not circumcised because his brothers died because his older brothers died because of Mila. In other words, there's some sort of hemophilia in the family, and so therefore brothers 1 and 2 on Rachmanis, they died through the bris. So when he now is born, so he is born with a perfectly legitimate pass on not getting a bris Mila. He's what's called an alacha anones. And so therefore he does not get a bris Mila. But and there is a discussion in terms of, is he going to be barred from any activity? Meaning, can he eat Karban Pesach? Can he not eat Karban Pesach? Okay, so that's a discussion. But over here, what we're saying is that he is included in the ability of sprinkling the Parah Aduma. And in terms of how the Gemara arrived at that conclusion, again, the Gemara doesn't go through the drushas over here. And Rashi says, for this, you go to the Gemara in Yevamos for a discussion about that. Hakol Shochtin. This is the one we all remember. This is the first daf of Chulin. We spent a lot of time on this. The Gemara spent at least 3 days of daf discussing this topic of Hakol Shochtin, what's included. Not only that, but if you remember, there were two Mishnayos that spoke to this idea of Hakol Shochtin that everyone can shecht. So Hakol Shochtin Lasui Mai. So over here, we don't even have one Hakol Shochtin. We have two Hakol Shochtins. And so therefore, we are looking to include two times over. Who are we looking to include? So Chana Lasui Kusi. So one is to include our Kusi. Remember the Kusim, the Shomronim, who came into Eretz Yisrael during Bayis Rishon, were converted. Major discussion, historical discussion, in terms of whether the conversion is a good conversion, a forced conversion, and only resolved years later. In the time of the Amoraim, they already they were still debating, and finally concluded that the Geirus is not a good Geirus. Anyway, at a point in time, their Geirus was viewed as a good Geirus, and so therefore, if I have a Kusi, shechting an animal, so that Shechita would be a good Shechita. And the second Mishnah, which says Hakol, that's coming to include a Mumer, somebody who's not particularly careful about Halachas, somebody that would eat Treif, so he can shecht. I know that sounds unusual, if he's eating Treif, so, well, you know, why would we allow him to shecht? But if you remember over there, the Gemara, he's a mummer ochel nevelos teyavon. It's not because he has any kind of real vendetta. He's not angry with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He gives into his Yetzer Hara way too easily. But if you gave him options of eating kosher, he'd eat kosher. He'd be fine eating kosher. So anyway, so that was the Gemara over there for our mummer. If you remember the Gemara in Chulin, so you had to give him already a prepared knife. Meaning you can't trust the fact that he's gonna check the knife, and in other words for him, if there's any kind of inconvenience, so he's not gonna be compliant with the halacha. But if all things being equal, so he wouldn't mind keeping mitzvahs of the Torah. Okay. Hakol malon l'Eretz Yisrael. Okay, the mitzvah of aliyah l'regel. I'm sorry. The mitzvah of aliyah. Period. Okay. So famously, the Rambam doesn't count as one of the mitzvahs in the Torah, much discussion. But let's say nice and simple. There's a mitzvah to go to Eretz Yisrael. There's a mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael. So in terms of the mitzvah of moving to Eretz Yisrael, so it says, Hakol Malon L'Eretz Yisrael. Now, this Gemara comes up in Ksuvas. Now, if you remember, it comes up in the Gemara in Ksuvas because Rachmanis, the husband and wife, are having a debate in terms of whether or not we should go to Eretz Yisrael. And so the Gemara over there has a lengthy discussion in terms of one wants to, the other one does not want to, and it really is it's a divide that cannot be resolved. And so is it worthy of a divorce? Is she entitled to a ksuva? So a discussion over there in the Gemara in terms of the mitzvah of Aliyah as it relates to husband and wife. So hakom on l'Eretz Yisrael, so everyone goes to Eretz Yisrael, lasuy amai. So the word hakol is obviously inclusive. What are we including over there? Lasuy avadim. It includes an Eved. Now, over here, let's assume we're talking about an Eved Kanani, as Rashi over here writes. So an Eved Kanani, what does that mean, Aliyah for an Eved Kanani? Meaning, wherever the owner goes, that's where he's going to go. So what does that mean? He's also included in the mitzvah of Aliyah. So if you take a look at Rashi over here, really interesting Rashi, on the top of the Amud. So Rashi writes, Lasuy avadim she'im yeshlo Eved Kanani mahul limkor. So let's say like this. He's an Eved Kanani, and he's going and right now he's currently living with his master outside of Eretz Yisrael. And he's going to be sold. So over here, it's not like a no trade clause.
Two wrong things right there.
Huh?
Two wrong things. Ah,
but in other words, but what he can do, however, is he does have some say in terms of where he's going to be sold to. Notably, he could say to his owner, you're going to sell me? You're selling me to somebody who lives in Eretz Yisrael. So in other words, in that regard, he can now at least dictate some of the terms of the sale in that he can force the sale so that he's going to be sold to Eretz Yisrael. Now some say that the Mishnah over there actually has the word Eved included. So then the Hakol is not including Avadim because it's stated clearly. So then what is the Hakol coming to include? So it means to say as follows. Let's say you live in luxury. Now, of course, we wouldn't know about that. We live in Boca Raton, Florida. What do we know about living in luxury? But let's say you live in luxury, and right now the following idea emerges in the house. Let's move to Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, but as nice a community? No, not as nice a community. But it's Eretz Yisrael. And so, right, this discussion has happened more than once. So So that's the hakol. The hakol is coming to include, even though you're moving from a something palatial to something less than palatial, that's okay. In other words, for that, so they're the mitzvah of Aliyah, and you can dictate the terms in terms of you and your spouse going to a less than better situation. Now, what about going in the other direction? So that is referring to Eved Shebarach Michutz Laaretz Laaretz. So let's say you have an Eved Kanani who runs away from outside of Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. So then, the same story, meaning that because he's now in Eretz Yisrael, so he gains a certain amount of sanctuary. Not exactly clear what's going to happen, meaning is he going to be then sold to somebody in Eretz Yisrael and his owner is going to get compensated? Not exactly clear. The Gemara in Gittin has a lengthy discussion about what happens to our Eved Shibarech that runs away. But again, though, once he seeks a refuge in Eretz Yisrael, so he gets a certain amount of sanctuary in Eretz Yisrael. Hakol malin liYerushalayim lasui minava yafa lenava ara veina kol motzin lasui mai lasui minava ara lenava yafa. And basically the same point within Eretz Yisrael itself. Let's say in Eretz Yisrael, so you're living large in Tel Aviv, you're living large in Haifa, and you decide, you know what, Yerushalayim. Yeah, but it's in Yerushalayim, it's cramped. And we're not gonna get a nice apartment in Yerushalayim. Okay, but it's Yerushalayim. So again, same basic idea. That yes, in other words, the same rules would apply even when you're making Aliyah in Eretz Yisrael, meaning going from outside Yerushalayim into Yerushalayim. And the same thing opposite as well. Meaning, let's say, from Yerushalayim to outside of Yerushalayim. So that means to say that, no, I can insist on living in Yerushalayim even though the conditions we live in are not ideal. Hakol chayavim b'sukkah, kohanim levim v'yisraelim. Okay, transition. We are now up to, we're on Gimel Amud Beis, we're towards the top of the Amud, we're at the two dots, and we're transitioning from the following. Up until now, we've been spending over a daf and a half, on the term hakol. We see the word hakol used in so many different areas in halacha. In the areas of erchin and adarim, smicha, just going to quickly run through, sukkah and lulav, tzitzis tefillin, Aliyah LeRegel, Shofar, Kriyas HaMegillah, Zimun, I'm going in the order that we did in the Gemara. Zimun, Zava, Tumas Mace, Tzaras, Paraduma, Shchita, the mitzvah of Aliyah, Aliyah Eretz Yisrael, and the mitzvah of going to Yerushalayim and living in Yerushalayim. Okay. So we just covered Hakol regarding all of them and who are they coming to include. We're now transitioning to the second part of today's daf, and this is going to go into tomorrow's daf as well. And that's the following. If you look at our Mishnah said that everyone's included in Erechin and Adarim, and then the Mishnah opens up with, and who's included? Kohanim, Leviim, V'Yisraelim. Okay. That's a funny line of the Mishnah. Why? Because they're all Jews. Now granted, Kohanim do the Avodah, and Leviim also are involved in the Avodah, but when all said and done, you're talking about the Jewish population. So basically, if I could read the Mishnah another way, just to explain a bit of the quote-unquote absurdity of the Mishnah says, you know who's chayv in the mitzvah of Erechin? Jewish people. Okay, good. Right. So when the Mishnah says, Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, meaning they're chayv in all the mitzvahs. Kohanim are chayv in more mitzvahs, as the Gemara says numerous occasions. But like, of course. So the question on the table, and this question is not limited to our Mishnah, but many other Mishnais and Brises as well, is that when the Mishnah opens up and the Brise opens up with the words, and you know, they're obligated in these mitzvahs, this particular mitzvah, you know who's obligated? Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim. Okay. We would have all figured that out. And so, another tour, this is going to be our second tour of Shas, in which we're going to discuss is all the places in Shas where it says Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, and why would I have thought any differently? Okay. So, we begin. Hakol chayavim b'sukkah kohanim levim v'yisraelim. Everyone's obligated in sukkah. You know who's obligated in sukkah? Kohanim v'yisraelim v'levim. Kohanim levim v'yisraelim. In other words, Jewish people. Good. So, I hani lo mechayvim ha-mechayve. The Gemara asked the question so beautifully, so succinctly. Well, if they're not going to be chayiv, so who is going to be chayiv? They're the Jewish people. Okay, so Kohanim and Tzrichle, so the Gemara says, I'll tell you like this. I would have had a Havamina that Kohanim are not obligated to sit in the Sukkah. Interesting, why? Because the Torah says that you have to sit in the Sukkah, you have to dwell in the Sukkah. Sukkah is going to be a place of residence. And we know, it's one of the most basic rules regarding the mitzvah of Yeshiva B'Sukkah, is that basically it has to be your home away from home. It's your home for a week. So Madira Ishvishto, Avsukkah Ishvishto. So in your home, so husband and wife are living together. So in your sukkah, husband and wife are living together. Now, v'hani kohanim, okay, so far we have not yet completed the argument, but we're making an argument as to why we would have thought kohanim are not obligated. So let's continue now. Hani kohanim hol v'nei avoda ninhu. Now, we know kohanim are doing the avoda. Now, it's true, right, Ben already knows, it's true that not all kohanim are doing the avoda, and it's based on the mishmar. It's also true that on Yontif, all the Kohanim come into the Beis HaMikdash. And so all of them are going to be involved in some form or another of the Avodah. Obviously, not everyone can be given an Avodah. There's only a limited amount of Avodah to go around, but still. And so now, here's what I might have thought. You know, Kohanim, so while they're doing the Avodah, obviously they can't be in a state of Tumah, obviously, because they're going to go into the Beis HaMikdash. So they have to be in a state of Tahara. If they're going to be in a state of Tahara, that means they can't be with their wives. I know it sounds unusual, but it's not. In fact, my mom in Har Sinai, that's exactly what happened. Meaning the entire Bnei Yisrael are going to be having revelation and audience with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And so the entire Bnei Yisrael had to be in a state of Tahara. And so therefore, they couldn't be with their wives. So that means to say that Kohanim and Yontif, right, it's a bit of an oddity. But when you speak it out, like logically, it makes sense. So during Yontif, Kohanim can't be with their wives. So therefore, so therefore, I would have thought that, look, the whole idea of being in the sukkah is being in the sukkah like you're in the home. Like when you're in the home, your husband and wife are together, is in the sukkah the same thing. But Kohanim can't be in that state during Yontif because they have to be in the Beis HaMikdash doing the avodah. So therefore, since they don't qualify of teshuv kein tadurim within the sukkah, so therefore, they're patur from the mitzvah altogether. So Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says, so now here comes the Chiddush. So the Gemara says, okay, so when they're actually doing the Avodah, you're right, the argument stands. But they're not doing the Avodah every single day of Sukkot. meaning there's an assumption that there's going to be time off. And during that time off, where they can be with their wives, and there would be a way for them to fulfill the mitzvah of Teshu Kein Taduru, so therefore they are able to be in the sukkah. So in other words, basically the Gemara's answer is, it's situational. The idea that they can't be in a sukkah is not fundamental, it's simply situational. And when the situation does not present itself, so then they have a mitzvah sukkah. The Gemara says, I'll give you an analogy. Somebody who's traveling. So while during the day, so because of traveling, it's understood. They're simply situationally, they're not in a position where they can have a sukkah. So they're exempted from the sukkah during the day. But at night when they're stationary and they're setting up tent, hey, you know what? You're setting up tent. I got a better idea. Set up sukkah. Okay, good. So in other words, so you see that when somebody's in a situation where they can't do the mitzvah, it doesn't mean they're fundamentally removed from the mitzvah. It just simply means that situationally they don't have the mitzvah. So that's the chiddush, that just like Holchei Derachim have a mitzvah of sukkah when they are able to do the mitzvah, same thing with Kohanim. They have a mitzvah to sit in the sukkah when they can. HaKol Chayav Mitzitzes Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. Here we go, round two. The second example. Everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of tzitzis, kohanim, levim, v'yisraelim. Pshita, kohanim, mitzvah, rechlein. And again, the Gemara is going to construct a havamina. Why? I might have thought that kohanim do not have to wear tzitzis. Sakadach, amina, hol, v'ksiv, lo, sil, bashan, is gedilim, tasalach. Because we know in Parshas Ki Tse, the Torah strings together a positive commandment being followed immediately by a negative prohibition. Other way around. Negative prohibition immediately followed by a positive commandment. The Torah says, lo, sil, bashan, is not to wear wool and linen. Followed then by the mitzvah of Gedilim Tasalach, the mitzvah of tzitzis. So mandalo yishari kolayim legabe belevisha udemechai betzitzis. Be mitzvah tzitzis. So there is a connection between these two. Now we know the biggest connection between the two is that when we make our tzitzis, we can make them with the kolayim, right? As per the Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos. Nowadays, by the way, we don't do that. Because nowadays we don't have the mitzvah b'shlei muksa. We don't have the full mitzvah. We're missing our tchelas. I know tchelas is making a comeback. But but nevertheless, the idea is that we don't have the mitzvah b'shleimus, so our mitzvah of tzitzis is not going to override kalayim. But in principle, the mitzvah of tzitzis is going to override kalayim. But the Gemara is going a step further. The Gemara is arguing that if you're not subject to the issur of kalayim, so maybe you're not included in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Now, kohanim, are they subject to the issur of kalayim? The Gemara is about to make an argument. No, so I could make the following argument: Kohanim, you know, when they wear the big day kahuna, so one of the begadim of the kohen, the avnet, the belt, is made up of shatnes. It's a cross of wool and linen. And meanwhile, the Torah says that for kohanim, that's how you make the belt. So therefore, for them, kohanim are given a pass on the iser of kalayim. So now the argument goes that since they're not obligated in the Isser of Kalayim, so therefore they are not chayv in the mitzvah of tzitzis. Kamash malan, nehid ishtar b'idan avoda, below idan avoda, lo ishtare. And again, the Gemara's answer is the same answer, situational. Yeah, they are given an allowance to wear Kalayim, but only situationally, only while they're doing the avoda. When they're doing the avoda, they're not allowed to wear Kalayim. So in other words, it's the same basic idea, that they're the argument that you're making assumed that this is a more fundamental principle that Kohanim are not obligated in the Isser of Shatnez, and the Gemara's response is no, that's situational.
If we're just focusing on the Kohanim, why doesn't the Mitzvah just say the Kohanim? Why do you have to mention the
Levirah? Correct. Again, it's an excellent point. Okay. HaKol Chayavim B'Tfilin Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. Tfilin. You know who's obligated in Tfilin? Jews. Okay, when I say it that way, you understand. It's like it's what prompts the Gemara every single time to wonder, like, who else? So pshita. So kohanim mitzvah rechlein. And again, the Gemara is going to construct an argument. Kohanim are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. What's the argument? So the mitzvah of tefillin, one goes on the arm, one goes between literally between the eyes, but on the head. So kol di'isa b'mitzvah di'ad isa b'mitzvah derosh. So now again, a connection. If you have the mitzvah shal yad, you have the mitzvah shal rosh. V'ani kohanim hol v'leisam b'mitzvah diyad dechsiv. Yol bash al b'saro shalei davar chotetz beino uvein b'saro. Kohanim's garments, the big day kahuna, have to be on the skin of the kohanim. Nothing can serve as a chatzitza, as a barrier separating the Kohen and his clothing. So if he's wearing the shalyad, the tefillin shalyad, obviously that's going to serve as a chatzitza. And so therefore the Kohen, when he's wearing his clothing, cannot wear the tefillin shalyad. So now he is given a pass on the tefillin shalyad. Maybe he should also be given a pass on the tefillin shalosh. So ema b'mitzvah derosh nami lo lechayve. So maybe it should be exempt from the mitzvah of the shalrosh. Kamash malan deloma akve adadei. And the Gemara says that these mitzvahs of the shalyan shalrosh are totally independent of one another. Kedid nam, we learned in the Mishnah tefillin shalyad in the makavish shalrosh v'shalrosh in the makavish shalyad. The Mishnah teaches us Mishnah Menachos that the shalyan and the shalrosh are independent of one another. They are not interdependent. And so therefore, if even though they do get a pass on the shalyad while they're wearing the big kahuna, but they're still obligated to wear the shalrosh. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. So the Gemara says, I'm a little bit confused. Meaning that they are not wearing the shalyad because that would be a chatzitza for their clothing. Can we make the same argument by the shalrosh? Meaning by the shalrosh, if they're putting the shalrosh on, so the mitznefes, the hat's not going to go on their head. Or the hat's going to go on their head, but on top of the shalrosh, and that's a chatzitza. And isn't that a problem? So the Gemara says, no, Tane, sa'aro hayanira bein sitz lemitznefes, shesham neach tefillin. So the Gemara says, you don't know how the Kohanim wear their hat. So the Gemara says, you know how the Kohanim wear their hat? So they wear the hat where the hat is a little bit back, so that the front of their hair is shown. As far as the Kohen Gadol and Sitz is concerned, the Kohen Gadol and Sitz is worn on his forehead. So exactly where the tefillin and shalrosh need to go, so there is an opening. There is actually, there's a hair, you know, assuming that there is hair, but there's a hairline right over there between the Sitz and that of the hat. So the Gemara says that the tefillin shalrosh actually fit. Okay. That was a lot. Okay, Shofar. I'll start with Shofar tomorrow. Shofar does go a little bit into tomorrow's daf, so I'll start with Shofar tomorrow. So, quick recap. So we finished all of our hakols in today's daf. In today's daf, we covered the hakols regarding Megillah, Zimun, Ziva, Tumas Meis, Negayim, Paraduma, Shchita, Aliyah, and then we did the Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim. Numerous times throughout Shas, the mission, the Brisa tells us that who's obligated in these mitzvahs, Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, and they are the Jewish people. So it sounds funny. Who's obligated in this mitzvah? Jewish people. Okay. And so why would the Mishnah and the Brises need to articulate Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim? And so far this morning, what was included? Sukkah, tzitzis, and tefillin. And the Havamin is why I would have thought that Kohanim are not obligated, not in the mitzvah of Sukkah, not in the mitzvah of tzitzis, and not in the mitzvah of tefillin. Kamash Malan, they are chayav.